A child enters kindergarten bursting with questions, eager to paint, build, dance, and explore. By middle school, that same child sits quietly at a desk, memorizing facts for tests, convinced they're not smart because they struggle with algebra. What happened? The answer lies in a system designed over a century ago to produce factory workers, not innovators. A system that treats education like manufacturing, where standardized inputs should yield predictable outputs. But here's the uncomfortable truth. Children aren't widgets, and schools aren't assembly lines. The world has transformed radically, yet our education systems remain frozen in an industrial past, measuring success through narrow metrics while ignoring the creative, emotional, and practical capacities that actually determine how people thrive. Picture a massive global experiment costing hundreds of billions of dollars, consuming 13 years of every child's life, yet producing graduates who can't find work, lack basic skills, and feel profoundly disconnected from learning. That's not a dystopian thought experiment. It's our current reality. Since 2001, the United States alone has spent over $800 billion on testing systems and accountability measures, yet 17% of high school graduates still can't read or write fluently. The numbers tell a devastating story. America has plummeted from first to 23rd in graduation rates among developed nations, with 7,000 students dropping out daily. Even those who stay are barely present. 63% of North American high school students report being mentally checked out. The industrial model operates on four toxic principles: conformity, treating all students identically; compliance, forcing everyone through rigid standards; linearity, assuming learning happens sequentially; and division, fragmenting knowledge into disconnected subjects. These principles worked for manufacturing cars. Applied to human development, they're catastrophic. The standards movement represents this approach taken to its extreme. Politicians worldwide imposing standardized curricula, high-stakes testing, and brutal accountability measures, creating clear hierarchies with literacy and math at the top, arts and physical education at the bottom. By its own metrics, it's failing spectacularly. Youth unemployment has reached record levels globally at nearly 13%. College degrees no longer guarantee employment. In South Korea, relentless academic pressure has contributed to the highest suicide rates among industrialized nations. Globally, suicide rates have increased 60% in 45 years, with young people now the highest risk group in a third of countries. Fifth grade teacher Rhonda Matthews loses a month to testing, forcing her to tell students, "Don't think too much." Since No Child Left Behind, federal testing requirements exploded from 6 to 14 tests throughout K-12. The testing industry has become a $16.5 billion behemoth, larger than domestic cinema and the NFL combined. What if schools were gardens rather than factories? Gardens create conditions where diverse organisms flourish according to their nature. Skilled gardeners don't force roses to become oak trees. They cultivate ecosystems where each organism thrives. Steve Reese proved this with students dismissed as academic failures in Kansas City. Through MindDrive, they built electric vehicles and drove them cross-country. These failing students suddenly excelled because they were finally engaged in meaningful work. All 12 seniors graduated, with 80% continuing to college. Richard Gerver created similar results at Grange Primary School by building Grangetown, a working town where students learned through immersive experiences. The school rocketed from underperforming to the top 5%. These examples reveal education's fourfold purpose: economically, helping students become self-sufficient; culturally, understanding their heritage while appreciating other cultures; socially, developing active, compassionate citizens; and personally, engaging students as unique individuals with their own talents and aspirations. Babies master language through immersion and curiosity, yet many struggle in conventional schools. The problem isn't the children, it's the system. Traditional classrooms feature rigid seating, predominantly verbal and mathematical instruction, standardized pacing, and fragmented schedules based on industrial manufacturing principles rather than how humans actually learn. Consider Lena from Working Class Liverpool. She loved elementary school but failed the 11 plus exam. Her headmistress publicly humiliated her for choosing hairdressing, calling her lazy. Yet Lena built a successful business, demonstrating organizational talents and people skills the school never recognized. The system labeled her a failure, but the real failure was its inability to see intelligence beyond test performance. Holy Trinity Primary School in disadvantaged Darwin, Lancashire, took a different approach. Teachers hold one-on-one sessions with every child each term, emphasizing relationships over grades. They created programs tailored to specific interests while fostering community interaction. Students called Holy Trinity their second home. Behavioral problems decreased and academic performance improved, all because they treated children as individuals rather than data points. Play represents the most misunderstood element of learning. Research into hunter-gatherer societies reveals that children who play freely develop into bright, happy, cooperative, resilient individuals. Modern education does the opposite, starting earlier, running longer, assigning more homework, systematically eliminating free play. This contradicts children's biological need for play, which is how they naturally learn essential skills. Rafe Esketh has taught for 30 years at Hobart Elementary in Los Angeles, Koreatown, where his immigrant students master Shakespeare, play instruments, and tackle advanced mathematics. Many attend Ivy League universities. His dedication crystallized when he literally set his hair on fire while helping a struggling student, prompting his resolution to always teach like my hair was on fire. That commitment earned him the National Medal of the Arts, the first teacher to receive this honor. Research comparing 140 factors influencing student achievement found that teacher expectations rank among the most important, second only to students' expectations of themselves. High-performing systems like Singapore and Finland understand this, placing enormous value on well-trained, highly motivated teachers. Great teachers grasp a fundamental truth. Their job isn't to teach subjects, but to teach students. Expert teachers possess a vast repertoire of techniques, constantly adapting to students' needs. Jeffrey Wright uses dramatic demonstrations to spark curiosity. As soon as you get the kid asking how or why, I can rope them in. Sergio Juarez Correa spent 5 frustrating years using traditional methods with poor results in a Mexican border town. In 2011, he switched to discovery-based learning and collaborative problem-solving. The results were remarkable. One student scored highest in math in all of Mexico, and 10 scored in the 99th percentile. The transformation came from treating students as capable learners rather than empty vessels. High Tech High in San Diego reimagines education through project-based learning that integrates disciplines and serves the community. Without bells or rigid periods, students work in immersive blocks while teachers collaborate in teams. Nearly all graduates attend college, with 70% choosing 4-year institutions. Rather than starting with separate subjects, schools should develop 8 core competencies based on education's 4 purposes: curiosity, creativity, criticism, communication, collaboration, compassion, composure, and citizenship. A balanced curriculum should give equal status to 6 areas: arts, humanities, language arts, mathematics, physical education, and science. This curriculum must embody diversity, helping students discover strengths, depth, allowing thorough pursuit of interests, and dynamism, fostering collaboration across ages and community connections. High-stakes testing incentivizes manipulation, with schools focusing only on borderline students while neglecting others. Many high-performing systems conduct fewer tests. Finland has just 1 at the end of secondary school. Andreas Schleicher notes the world economy no longer pays you for what you know, but what you can do with what you know. In Surrey, British Columbia, schools pilot gradeless systems using online portfolios where teachers document work through photos, set individual goals, and provide near-daily updates. Great learning requires 3 essential figures: a learner, an educator, and an inspired leader who creates environments where students thrive. Boston Arts Academy exemplifies this. Despite 65% of students qualifying for free lunch and a third arriving below grade level, 94% attend college. Schools are complex, adaptive systems that evolve under proper leadership. Unlike mechanisms requiring tighter procedures, schools are organisms with distinct cultures centered on permission, what's acceptable, and who decides. Transformation happens when people feel empowered to experiment without fear. Gene Hendrickson demonstrated this in Oklahoma, asking simply, "Do these kids deserve the same opportunities as others?" With unanimous agreement, she doubled arts and music time using Title I funds. Worldwide, leaders are creating alternatives. In Argentina, Silvina Geertz reduced dropout rates from 30% to 1% by involving communities. In China, Zhang Shuekin built a school where students skipped the Gaokao to pursue writing, business ventures, and social service. Scotland's curriculum for excellence exemplifies national transformation through extensive consultation. Effective change requires five elements: vision, skills, incentives, resources, and an action plan. Without them comes confusion, anxiety, resistance, frustration, or stagnation. The revolution has begun. Teachers ignite with passion. Principals create cultures of possibility. The question isn't whether we can transform education, it's whether we'll stop killing creativity and start cultivating it. Your child's potential isn't a problem to standardize away. It's a garden waiting to flourish.